Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances. And get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
In the SEC Conference, we're going to build the best football program in the SEC Conference.
You have now arrived at Stadium in Field. You have now arrived at Stadium in Gale.
Hey girls, ladies and gents, welcome to a pop-up show of Stadium in Gale. It's your boy Corey.
It's Dan.
Dan Delatorre. Froze.
Yeah.
Dan Delatorre. New name? New name. Who this?
And Delatorre.
Oh, Dan, and oh, I thought you said Dan Delatorre, man. What's up, guys? How y'all feeling? Pop-up show, Emmitt Smith on the horizon, Texas A&M tomorrow. We'll talk a little bit about that as well, but how y'all feeling? Ready?
And this is a GOAT. This is a guy that obviously I grew up watching. You know, he played on the Cowboys, and that's when the Cowboys were on, you know, TV all the time. I'm pumped. I'm super, super excited for this interview. You know, we talk about legends, and we've interviewed a lot of them on this show, but there's very few that have been in the Ring of Honor, in the NFL Hall of Fame. This might be our first NFL Hall of Famer, Corey.
Is it?
I think so. I think so. We've got we've interviewed a couple people in the Ring of Honor, Danny Werfel, now him. Stay tuned. We're working on another big guest. I haven't even told the boys yet, but stay tuned. Stay tuned.
Oh, you holding secrets?
Okay. Hold secrets because I don't want to overpromise and underdeliver.
I get Shakira. Excited.
It's Shakira.
My wife?
No. Oh. The international pop star.
The second most important Shakira in the world. Gotcha.
Yeah. Definitely, before we get Emmitt on, we could kick in and talk a little bit of Texas A&M. And we didn't get a depth chart. We waited on the depth chart. I guess they don't want us to know for we can't do pop-up shows, I guess. But no depth chart. What's y'all thoughts, bro?
I did enjoy the response that Billy didn't want to make people mad by making, because Graham Mertz is going to start, and Billy was afraid of Twitter's reaction, so he decided just not to release a depth chart. I think the more reasonable thing is, well, now that everyone in the SEC has to do this, you start to look around, you're like, oh, well, Texas doesn't release a depth chart. Kentucky doesn't always release it. Like, why do we have to do this?
I get it, but it's more fun to be outraged.
Yeah. No, I get it. Nothing. I told someone last night, nothing Billy does outside of finishing the season 11-1 is going to get some of these fans back on his side.
I don't even know. 11-1.
Sure. Yeah, nah, I mean, that means that beating Georgia. That means beating Tennessee. That means winning at Texas.
No, I know how the tweets will go, you know?
I'm on the other side now, bro. It's gonna take a lot to impress me, man. But beating Georgia would be, you know, very pleasant to my soul. But that Miami stench is heavy. They was all over our furniture, man. I can't just let that get. It can't get out of my mind. But here's my thing. Like, it's definitely not strategic outside of fan reaction, because if it takes you 3 years to realize that other programs, and you don't have to release a depth chart that's already filled with a ton of oars that we don't really know a lot when we read it anyway. I don't know what they gain from not releasing it outside of just bringing more negative attention. Like, most fans are going to gripe regardless. I'd rather you gripe put an or at quarterback than just not release one. I think that brought more outrage than actual depth chart with Merch starting would have brought.
Probably just a different outrage.
Right. Yeah, there'd be a I do this.
Whatever step they make, there is outrage.
But this is the first year of injury reports, right?
Yes. So, first week, like, second week,
right? So, we are different, right? So, times are a little bit different. Is it gamesmanship? If you look at the depth chart from week one and week two, not a ton of changes. If you look at the injury report and you compare, you have a pretty general idea of how this looks. And there is also a depth chart internally. I saw some tweets out there when it was like, what, our players don't know like when they're going to play or where they sit in the depth chart. I'm like, pretty sure the players know where they sit on the depth chart. You know what I mean? Like, we can be outraged about the lack of a depth chart because we want content. But at the end of the day, like, the players know. So let's not take it too far here either.
If you played ball before, then you know they got to do walkthroughs. But they call the ones out first to go through walkthroughs. So the players definitely know where they are, who's starting, what the first drive going to be. They practice the script drive all week, their first scripted drive. So people know, like, the players definitely know. Just relax.
We didn't get to talk about Steve Spurrier had a pretty open interview after the week one loss to Miami. And he mentioned one of the things that he would do is he would change how early players go out onto the field. He's like, there's players that are warming up an hour and a half before game time. You guys have any thoughts on that? He's like, we used to do like an hour before, and then you're back in the locker room 20 minutes. But it's like, are you burning too much energy being out there, especially when it's super hot and super humid in Gainesville? You guys have any thoughts on that? I know I'm kind of catching you with a curveball of a question here.
Yeah, they're not really doing a lot, and they're also not dressed out. They don't come dressed out like in pads and helmets until like 45 minutes before the game. When they're out there 90 minutes before, a lot of it is just guys like headphones on, running some routes, maybe stretching, jogging, throwing a little bit. Like, they're not out there. You know, they will go through, like, Tyler Miles will take them through like a team stretch, team kind of thing. But I get where Coach is coming from. Like, it's hot. We're up in the press box, and the press box is open air. And like, it's hot and sweaty and muggy, but these are also like, I gotta change my age range because of COVID. They're 18 to 29 year old men. Shout out to Cam Rising in his eighth year of eligibility. But yeah, I think there's some credence to it, but I would have more of a problem if they were out there in pads 90 minutes
before. Gotcha. Yeah. I just wanted to see who would tell the old ball coach he was wrong.
No, I'm gonna side whatever the old ball coach says over this crew. So if old ball coach say we need to be out there 30 minutes before kickoff, let's just side with whatever he says.
He would smack you if he heard you calling him the old ball coach. He's the head ball coach, HBC.
All right. So I do want to give a quick shout out to our sponsors here, Brunt Insurance, 954-589-2204 for all of your insurance needs. Go visit homefieldapparel.com. Use promo code Stadium and Gale. GameTimeSidekicks.com. Use promo code Stadium 15. And I do want to announce, through the end of September, Alumni Hall is doing a 20% off in store and online if you use promo code Stadium and Gale. I know a lot of people have been asking for that promo code back. So again, that's alumnihall.com, promo code Stadium and Gale, or at the store in Gainesville, Florida. So if you're up there for the Texas A&M game this weekend, go swing by Alumni Hall, let them know that we sent you. With that being said, the Gators do play Texas A&M tomorrow at 3:30 in the Swamp. I do want to pull up the injury report here, and let's take a look at that. So right now we have Jaquavion Frazier, Jakeem Jackson, Keon Zipper, Asa Turner, Khalil Jackson, and then a couple of walk-ons, Caleb Rios, another walk-on, and Jamari Lyons out. None of those should be a surprise, except for maybe Jakeem Jackson not being able to play this week. From a questionable perspective, Sharif Denson is questionable. Eugene Wilson is questionable. Andy Jean is questionable. Bryce Thornton's questionable. TJ Searcy and Devin Moore. Nick, before we bring Emmett on in 8 minutes here, anything that you can share about any of those questionable folks?
I mean, the one that I think matters would be Eugene Wilson. I think he was able to, or I was told he was able to practice on Thursday night. That'd be the one offensively, I think, you know, that Florida fans would be really, really interested in. TJ Searcy, I think he's going to be able to go. I would expect him to be able to go. And I believe that's like an arm or an elbow. He's had a pretty large brace, like one of those that like JJ Watt used to wear on his elbow the past 2 weeks. And then Devin Moore, you know, I'll believe Devin Moore is available when the ball is snapped and he's on the field.
Yeah.
Not entirely mad at I think Dijon Mustard Johnson, bro, has been playing very solid. We said this on the show earlier this week. I think he's been playing very solid football, and I think he deserves more opportunity. So with Devin Moore out and Jakeem out, you should get number 27 out there with more reps, and I think he's itching for a big play. We'll see how it all plays out. But, you know, if you watch the tape, and he just got a lot of that gamey energy to him. We'll see how it all plays out. But I think we get a big play out of him this weekend. I just want to see more of him regardless at corner. Devin Moore is who he is at this point. I don't think he's going to miraculously just get great health for the rest of the season. So we're going to have to lean on these young boys. And we're still only one snap away. I know we talked about Cormundy not playing a lot this fall, but right now we may see him this weekend, to be real with you. Right, we're not far away from Cormundy touching the field.
That's tough.
That ain't not tough. What? The kid can play, man. Like, don't get it twisted. He can play. Like, it's a lot to be desired with his maturation and also size-wise, but he put on decent size. But flat out, the way we've been getting beat on some big plays, even out of Jakeem, like, I would love to see Cormundy in those situations because he has great ball skills. Pause.
Nick, remind me, questionable just means it's a 50-50 shot at yes. the time of this, if they're going to play or not?
Yeah, so they will update every night around 8:10. So we'll get another update tonight at 8:10. Let me pull up my story so I can get this 100% accurate. And then the game day designations will be different. They'll be like available or out. So out, obviously, 0% chance to play. Doubtful would mean unlikely. Or a 25% chance, questionable, coin flip. It's uncertain, 50-50. And then there will be probable tags as well. And that's a 75% chance to play. I mean, you could have somebody that's probable to play and pulls up, you know, during that 90-minute warm-up that Coach Spurrier likes and you know, twists an ankle.
Is there any reason to list somebody as probable instead of questionable? It seems to me like you should just list everybody that's going to potentially play as just questionable.
Yeah,
like, your hand a little bit if you're like, it's 75% chance.
But they're also going to start finding people if they think that you're and can prove that you're manipulating these injury reports.
Yeah, I've got to know what the difference between being 25% likely out to being 37% likely out, you know? So I don't know enough. You
need to go to several years of medical school to get that.
Mm. Yeah, not doing that. Texas A&M right now, Reuben Owens, running back, is out. Mark Nadeau out. Scooby Williams, questionable. Tyreek Chappelle out.
William Start.
Trey Jones out. Those are two defensive backs. And then Connor Wegman is listed as questionable. Nick, I know you're on the phone right before we started. What do we got on Connor Wegman? And Tyreek Chappelle seems like a tough loss for them.
Yeah, Tyreek Chappelle would be in the slot, which means, Dan, say the line.
The game's going to go as Jaden Hill goes.
Jaden Hill would be the next man up there for Chappelle. So that's one to watch. Connor Wegman, I was told, like, if Texas A&M had to do the availability report last week, you only have to do them for SEC games, he would have been questionable last week, and nothing has changed. So he played last week. I think the expectation would be that he would play. But as you have to, you know, release these injury reports, if he's, you know, probably just trying not to get fined.
Yeah. It's a non-throwing shoulder injury is the rumor.
That's the rumor.
We don't know, though, because you don't have to list what the appendage that has the problem is. But that's the rumor. It's a rumor. Hopefully,
these could be suspensions as well. Like, it doesn't have to be. That's why they're calling it an availability report. You could be academically ineligible and they would just list you as out and you're not hurt.
Which is interesting. We were watching the Dolphins game yesterday. You know, tough loss for the boys in Aqua and Orange. But I learned that Von Miller switched to poultry science because he needed to get his GPA up. So shout out to the poultry science majors. And then apparently he fell in love and now has a farm. So that's something that I learned about Von Miller yesterday.
It don't seem like that's an easy degree.
At Texas A&M?
I mean, it seems like you're getting into some biology, you're getting into some agriculture, you're getting into some supply and demand and logistics, right?
If a football player is switching to that major to get their GPA up to stay eligible, it's probably not a tough major.
That's their family, youth, and community services degree? Yeah.
No, that's where they got all the plugs with the teachers at.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure that degree is not easy, my brother. Like, they got the plugs and the grades and the teachers to, you know, slide you an A. Allegedly.
Shout out to poultry man Von Miller.
Speaking of poultry, I saw that Arkansas is now sponsored by Walmart and Tyson, so they will have they will have logos on the field now. So I'm just waiting for that orange lightning bolt to enter the Gators stadium here in the not too distant. Yeah, I don't see it happen.
Let me make a pitch. One, I think it should be more Florida centric. And when I think that, I think obviously Publix.
Okay.
Would love to see a Publix logo.
Okay.
Even more so than that, would love to see a Flanagan's logo.
Flanagan's.
What's more Florida than Flanagan's?
Publix?
I don't think they got the budget.
Publix is all over the place. Florida has a number that they want, and they just have not been able to get that number. So I don't
exactly. And Flanagan's is definitely not gonna, you need that boat.
So many more green cups. You have to sell so many more green cups.
100%, man. 100%.
Awesome. Well, we can talk a little bit more about that. We've got Emmett Smith waiting for us in the green room. So before we bring him on here, we are thrilled to welcome NFL legend and University of Florida Gator Ring of Honor member Emmett Smith to the show today. In addition to his illustrious 15-year NFL career, Emmett is teaming up with the Emergent BioSolutions for the second year of the Ready to Rescue program, raising awareness for Narcan nasal spray to combat the opioid crisis. He's passionate about helping others, and Emmett is using his platform to encourage families and communities to be prepared in the event of an overdose emergency. And with that, we welcome NFL legend Emmett Smith to the show. Emmett, pleasure to have you on, my friend.
That's how y'all doing?
Good, man. Good. How are you?
Good. I'm good. Excellent. Thank you.
Good. Emmett, we want to talk with you a lot about what you're doing for drug overdose and for Narcan. But I guess my first question to you is, obviously, we're a Florida Gators podcast. How did you end up at the University of Florida, and what was that experience like for you?
You know, I ended up at the University of Florida. First of all, let me take a step back. Being here in the state of Florida, my high school was the Gators. It was a natural segue into the University of Florida. And I started loving the University of Florida back in the early 80s. Charlie Pell, Curran Bell, and John L. Williams, Neil Anderson, Lorenzo Hampton, Frankie Neal, you know, those guys, Walter Odom playing tight end and everything else. And so I was following the Gators at that time and was loving them because of the orange and blue. And plus, my high school was the Gators, like I said. So it was a natural fit there. And so when I graduated from high school in 87, yes, I took a number of different visits. Went to Nebraska, went to Clemson, went to Auburn, and Florida State. Florida State never had a chance. I just took that trip just to appease one of my former high school teammates. But Auburn was the one school that really had a real shot at getting me. And but my mom didn't want me to leave the state. And Florida was the her choice. Florida's my sister's choice. Florida's my whole family choice. And so I ended up in Florida, and for 3 years there, it was a great experience. Although we didn't have a chance to compete for the SEC title or anything of that nature, because we coming out of the SEC, it was hard to win a national title at that time because the SEC schools were so competitive. But you had Auburn, Georgia, Florida was competitive, Alabama was competitive, even Kentucky and Vanderbilt were competitive, Mississippi State and Ole Miss, all of us was competitive. But in Tennessee, not to mention Tennessee. So it was a great time at UF for 3 years.
You will be Mr. Two Bits this weekend, and I want to know how nervous you are to do that compared to running in the NFL and in the swamp with people chasing you.
You know, I'm not nervous at all about Mr. Two Bits. I love it. I've seen him perform it for many years when I was. However, I am more nervous to watch my kid play against my university than anything else. I mean, I'm going to be on pins and needles watching my boy come through that tunnel in his Aggie uniform. And once he stepped foot on the football field, it's going to be a surreal moment for me because I mean, I remember bringing him to the University of Florida when he was like 4 or 5 years old, let him sit on a Gator and everything else. And in his mind, that's what he was thinking. He was going to be a Gator the whole time. Urban Meyer used to send him all kinds of Gator stuff, and his room was full of Gator stuff. But when it came down to making that decision as far as his journey, he chose Stanford. Mm-hmm. He went the educational route, and he wanted to come back to Texas, so he ended up at Texas A&M, wanted to be closer to home, so which I understand and I respect. But doing Mr. Two Bits, that's going to be light compared to what I'm going to be feeling watching him play that game.
I'm a brand new dad, and I can only imagine what the pride you'll have seeing him on a field that you know you started your career on. So that's very cool for you, and congratulations, and hope EJ does well. We'll wonder how well we want EJ to do versus the final score. Maybe like 220 rushing yards in a tight loss.
Hey, I take that too, but still, I mean, if he rushing for 200 yards against my Gators, and they're not known for 200 yards rushing. But if that happens – and I'm going to win. They're going to win the game if that happens.
I'm trying to make the best case scenario for EJ and for your Gators.
Just as that freshman
coming to the – if that happens, that will be
– I'm sorry. Go ahead. Okay. As a freshman walking – all right. As a freshman walking onto the University of Florida, your mindset at that time, like in hindsight, we can look back and you're one of the greatest all time in the NFL and also in college. Did everything pan out in your mind as you're walking on as a freshman? In hindsight, did everything pan out how you thought it would?
You know, I would say no, because the reason why I'm going to say no is because I never expected the University of Florida to have so much turnover in the 3 years I was there. We had to learn three new offenses for three straight years. Hmm. So my freshman class and myself, we didn't have a chance to grow into an offense like some people have 3 or 4 years in offense with the offensive coordinator. My freshman year was Mike Helmdinger, who went off and became a coordinator for the Titans. My second year was a guy by the name of Lynn Amity, who came in it was a broken T kind of offense. It was different. My last year, which was my best year, was a guy by the name of Whitey Jordan. And but then after that year, they fired him. They fired the whole entire coaching staff, which forced me to make a tough decision. Should I stay for my senior year or not? And so one of my biggest regrets is not being able to finish with my freshman class, because that freshman class was what Steve Spurrier built his team off of. The Godfrey Miles, the Tim Polks, the Shane Matthews, Terrence Barbers, Ephesian Bartleys, Tony McCoys, the Tony Riles, the Brad Culpeppers. That was my freshman class. And I didn't get a chance to really finish up what we came in to do as true freshmen. And so that's the most disappointing part. But for the most part, everything else, me personally, I had a tremendous amount of success. And the only reason I had it because I did have great offensive linemen, great teammates as well. Cal Dixon and any other, Hisham Ishmael and Cal Dixon, Glenn Neely. Just some whole slew of people.
Also, if you play that senior year, like the pecking order of Gators all time rushers is definitely different, right? If you play that senior year for sure.
No doubt is different. No doubt is different. And it's different because I would have had a year extra to make the yardage go even further. And just when that speed Spurrier brought to the table, which would have been a little bit more open air and open space, more spread out offense, I'd have been able to have a lot more room. But I'm not going to look back over what could have, should have, would have been. Because I think God did what gave me what I needed to have and sent me on to where I needed to go. And I'm fortunate and blessed that my career turned out the way it did with the Dallas Cowboys.
Absolutely, Emmett. That leads me to my question here is obviously you have NFL records. You won multiple Super Bowls. But looking back on your time at UF and in the NFL, what's the thing that you most look back at as cementing your legacy, or what are you most proud of during your career?
I think the thing that I'm most proud of is not only did I come back and get my degree, but I think I've honored and represented the university at the highest level that I possibly could. I did not bring embarrassment or shame to the university, nor my family or my high school at all, or my city of Pensacola. I think I've gone on and tried to hold myself at the highest level of integrity and perform at the most excellent level that I possibly could and represent all of those that believed in me, that trusted in me, that poured into me as well. To me, I'm more proud of all of those things. Because it's important. You go to a university like the University of Florida, you get your education, and you go off and you want to make something of yourself. And so and I think that's the aspiration of most people wanting to make something of themselves. And I feel like I've done that and established that some of the fundamentals and the principles that was instilled in me at a young age and those other building blocks that have come on and built on top of those things are still there. And so that's important to me.
On that Dallas Cowboy team, just absolute dogs, legends, man. You know, I grew up in that era. It was 49ers and the Dolphins every year kind of battling out who's going to win the Super Bowl at one time. Who's the ultimate alpha male in that locker room? You got Michael Irvin, Troy Aikman, just absolute killers, man. But who was the top dog and leader amongst a bunch of alphas?
Irvin brought all the energy, all the fire, all the intensity, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and Troy brought complete focus and great leadership. I think overall, there were a ton of alpha dogs in the locker room. Some that were more vocal, some that was more action-oriented, but they all had a level of influence that impacted everyone else's and how everyone else perceived them and how everyone else operated and worked. there was a standard that was set, and that standard was set early by our head coach, Jimmy Johnson, in terms of the standard and the expectation of what he wanted from his team. And it was up to us all as players and individual players, including alpha dogs like Irvin and Aikman and others, to fall in line with that standard in order for us to achieve what we wanted to set, what we set out to achieve. And that was to win Super Bowls. And so, but Irv brought energy, brought fire, brought passion and everything else. You saw it in his play. Troy brought focus, laser focus, commitment, and dedication to the game, you know, and I did what I needed to do, period, to make things better.
Can I ask a second part question to that? What was the locker room like with Deion and Michael Irvin in the same locker room?
You know, it was a great locker room. Most people got this misconception that those egos could never get along. That's not even close to the truth. Deion was an excellent teammate. I mean, an excellent teammate. He was a guy, and most people are shocked that to hear this, that Deion was a student of the game. I don't know why people act like he just went out there and played on sure talent. This dude studied. He studied down and distance. He studied formations. He studied just route patterns. And he understood more of what was happening on the football field, which made him an excellent football player. His talent was great. Don't get me wrong. But knowing what to do and how to when to jump certain things and when to and knowing what's coming, that's half the battle. And that's 90% of the battle. Because I always tell people this, football is 90% mental, 10% physical, period. It's not the other way around. Because the more you know about the game, the slower the game becomes. And with Prime, he was an excellent teammate. He shared information with teammates. He wanted to see other players get better, and he helped them get better too at the same time by just sharing the information that he knew. He taught guys how to practice and everything else. And so I have nothing but kudos to say about Deion and how what kind of teammate he really was.
Was there any Big Three college rivalry between you, Deion, and Mike? Watching games on Saturday.
Always.
That was a great time always. For you.
Yeah.
Well, during the Steve Spurrier era, yes, for
yes.
sure.
Yes.
And the Urban Meyer era, for sure.
Yes.
Yes, I made some money during that time, but now I'm losing money.
No doubt. Emmett, who was your most hated rival when you were at UF?
Florida State.
Okay.
That makes sense. From Pensacola, all the people back home are Seminoles. That has to feel good to for 365 days you can't talk to
Semihos.
Me.
We call them Semihos. we call them Semihos. Not Seminoles.
I love that, man. I love that. Well, Emmett, before we leave, the Gators game against Texas A&M tomorrow is sponsored by Narcan, and you are teaming up with Emergent for the second year for the Ready to Rescue program to raise awareness for Narcan nasal spray as we try to stem the tides lost to opioid overdose. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got involved in that program? And then ultimately what got you interested in I guess, Narcan and what Emergent is doing here?
Well, Emergent and I have teamed up, and this is our second year in this process of spreading awareness around the opioid epidemic that's plaguing the country. I got involved because I've had, in my own personal life, had some personal experiences by losing a teammate to an opioid overdose. My sister-in-law was dealing with stage 4 cancer and accidentally overdosed on some of the pain meds, trying to alleviate the pain, not only once, but twice. And so seeing it up close and personal, understanding how it can not only impact a person's life or a family's life, but just seeing it made sense. So when the opportunity was presented, it felt like a natural fit for me, and I could talk about the different things. In recent years, we've seen a number of celebrities fall prey to not only opioid overdoses, but also fentanyl has been incorporated into a number of different pills and everything else that's going on if you're on the drug use side of the equation. We've seen celebrities lose their lives. So it is a big issue. I just heard someone talk about it other night in a debate. They talk about how much fentanyl is coming across the border. So if it's coming across the border in droves, like they say it is, it's going to impact our lives one way or another. Either somebody that we know has had an issue with drugs or with opioid overdoses, whether it's pill form or whatever it may be, somewhere someone that we know is close to it. And so I would say we're probably 2 or 3 degrees separated from it. But it's close enough to where we can see it and how it impacts another person's life. And so with the Ready to Rescue campaign, we're just trying to continue to spread awareness around it. We're encouraging people to go to Narcan.com to get more information on it. We also are trying to give people examples of how to utilize the product itself through the lay, stay, and spray method. Those are things that we're doing. We believe truly, if you stay ready, you don't have to get ready. And everybody has an opportunity to impact another person's life. And you never know when your number will be called. And when your number is called, are you up for the task? And the best way to be up for the task is to have a Narcan nasal spray close by, either in your home, in your purse, in your car, wherever you want to have it at, so you can use it whenever you need it.
Absolutely. And you can go visit the tailgate that they're having tomorrow that starts at 1 p.m. That's going to be the Ready to Rescue tailgate at the game tomorrow at 1 p.m. before he heads off to dress in a yellow shirt and a fake tie and do the 2 bits. Emmett, before we get out of here, we got one more minute with you. What's your expectation and what's your prediction for the game tomorrow?
It's going to be loud.
Okay. is it Mr. 22 bit?
That's gonna be loud.
Have we missed a marketing opportunity here?
It's gonna be Mr. 22 bits. 22 gonna do the 2 bits, and then after that, we're gonna watch hopefully a very good football game between Ann, the Maggies and the Gators. Hopefully, I get to see 22 from the Aggie side get in the end zone.
I hope not. Can I get one more in? Favorite running back, not you, since you left.
I hope so.
Who'd you enjoy watching the most since you left the University of Florida? He froze.
Fred Taylor, no doubt. But Eric Rett and I played together. Eric Rett came in right after I did. And I love Eric Rett. I love his heart. I love his spirit. I love the way what he stands for in terms of a footballer. And his personality was fun to be around. He made football enjoyable. I didn't get a chance to be around Fred Taylor as much, but I loved his spirit. I loved the way he carried the ball and the way he represented himself as a football player, even in the pros with the Jags. And so those were my guys.
I love that. Well, Emmett, we cannot thank you enough for coming on the show today. Again, everybody go check out the Ready to Rescue tailgate tomorrow. It starts at 1 p.m. where you can learn more about Emergent Narcan and how that is going to stem the lives that we have lost to opioid overdoses and the opioid epidemic. Emmett, we thank you so much for joining us today and good luck tomorrow to you and to your son. Not too much luck for him, but good luck to you.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. And if you need more information on the Narcan product, go to Narcan.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Emmett. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Go. Hey, man. Hey, I'm on cloud 9, brother. I wore that man jersey. I was a 49er fan as a kid, and I wore a cowboy jersey just because, you know, I rocks with Emmett as a Gator, bro. Like, real deal, man. Special moment for me personally in podcast world.
Yeah. No, that's somebody. I was talking to Brooke about this over the last few weeks as we've been getting this in the works. And Brooke is from outside of Philadelphia, and she said you had to hit him with a go Birds. I'm like, if I never want to show my
absolutely
face,
not.
around Emmett Smith ever again. I can't hit him with a Go Birds, but that's awesome. And, you know, really encourage you guys, if you're going to be in Gainesville tomorrow, to go check that out. Go check out the Ready to Rescue tailgate at 1 o'clock. I had a friend of mine die a couple years ago to an opioid overdose. So it's not something that you ever want to find yourself in, just kind of tearing up thinking about it. But go check out the tailgate. Go take a look at Narcan. It is a unbelievable product that has saved countless lives. And I think it's really, really cool that Emmett's involved in that charitable cause. I definitely encourage you guys to go check that out. But boys, we did it. Emmett Smith on the show.
Hey, man.
Cool.
I'm on cloud nine. I haven't smoked today, man. So that's beautiful. Are we finished talking about the game?
No, not yet. Not yet. I do want to give some super chat shout outs. Anthony, very sorry that we weren't able to visit yours, man. Really appreciate you giving the super chat. We tried, just didn't really fit in with the time. We were very, very tight on that commitment. So we really appreciate you, man, and know that you got a special place. Hit us up and we'll get you something from the Stadium and Gale store. Jason asked Emmett if he's from Pensacola or Dallas. Definitely from Pensacola. He shouted that out at the beginning of the show. And then Stone Cold Drip Sauce 1022 is the goat. Don't sit right. EJ is on A&M. All right, let's get back to the game. We've got quarterback situation. What are you guys seeing? What are you guys thinking? How do you think it shakes out tomorrow?
Oh, man, I think it shakes out. I think Mertz is the starter. I think we all are expecting Mertz to be the starter. How they rotate him, I don't know what to expect. I spoke already on here about the rotations on the entire roster has been absolutely crazy. But my worst nightmare is them starting Mertz, us struggling early, and then us having some lagway late heroics that's just too little too late is my worst nightmare in this whole scenario tomorrow. And home field, bro, we need home field advantage. We lost it. It wasn't their Miami game. You need early success to get the building crunking into the game. And Mertz cannot come out and stall. I think he's got to be firing on all cylinders and pressing to get some points right out the gate.
Yeah, I think I've said before, like, Billy Napier isn't going to outright lie to you as a coach. Mm-hmm. You're not going to say everything. He's not going to. As a coach, you're not going to say everything. I think you need to read between the lines. Graham's going to start tomorrow. Then my question is, how short is the leash? If it's two straight three and outs, do you throw DJ in? Is it three? If the offense hasn't scored or really moved the ball in the first quarter, do you start the second quarter with DJ? What's a shakeout? I asked on our message board, I was like, what if Florida wins tomorrow, wins Saturday, and the rep shakeout is 95-5 in favor of Graham, but you win by 14 and it looks good. Are you happy? Or is it just, I got to see DJ. Thank you for your service, Graham. Appreciate you. Enjoy the NIL Mercedes, but it's time for DJ.
Yeah, I'm going to want the win. I'm never going to be upset about a win. So if they find a way to win 14 points with Graham Mertz, it's hard to, like, for me as a rational person to bicker. But still, I've seen Lagway play already, and I think for us to be successful this season, even with 14 points, like, there should be more involvement with him, in my opinion, to get him reps for the tougher games. Because if you're going to start him, you got to do it now. Not even start him. If you're going to play him a lot, this is the ideal time to start getting him reps now, because the schedule just gets tougher as we go. So regardless of the score of the win, at 5% of the snaps, I'm not going to be satisfied with that type of rotation or whatever you want to call it, quarterback management.
Can I tell ask you a contrarian? No, Nick, go ahead. I've got a contrarian take.
I was going to say, tell me when to stop. 90-10.
I don't like
85-15.
I don't like that.
80-20.
The minimum I'm going to go is 70-30.
All right, you're probably going to be mad. You're probably going to be mad on Saturday night. I don't see it 70-30 unless, like, DJ gets hot in a drive in the third quarter and they just give him the fourth. And it's just like, hey, Graham, DJ's – we're cooking. We're cooking with grease right now. Unless that happens, I don't see, you know, 70-30 being the move.
Let me ask you guys a contrarian take here. It's not mine. I'm just throwing it out there. What if it's DJ that struggles when he comes in? How do you handle that situation?
Quite possible. I mean, it's a 19-year-old kid. This game means a lot to him. He grew up 45 minutes from College Station. This is a team he grew up watching. A ton of Aggie fans in Willis, Texas. This game means a lot to him. And are you putting too much pressure on yourself? Also, like I've mentioned before, I'm like, those windows that were open against A&M or against Samford are not going to be the same windows you're throwing into. The pressure is going to be different. Even though Florida plays 9 offensive linemen, they still seem to give up some pressure. And I think we will see DJ. If DJ is given the starting role, we will see struggles. You will see growing pains. You will see him fail throughout the year. But I think what happened against Samford is we always thought that, like, hey, DJ has a higher ceiling than Graham Mertz. I think Graham Mertz would tell you that. Like, hey, this kid has more God-given ability than I have. But the floor of a freshman DJ, I think we thought was way lower than what Graham's floor would be. I think after Samford, you're like, all right, well, the floodwaters came, and that floor for DJ went up. And I think that's probably, outside of him being the future, why you're thinking, like, just start the kid.
Yeah. Even when I, like, just to speak on what you were saying, even when he had tight windows, because there were some Samford throws where the windows were tight and his ball placement was just, like, phenomenal.
Yeah.
But I do expect a freshman, true freshman, or any quarterback, when you're first taking significant snaps and you haven't been, it's going to be some type of struggling, but you just got to put him in the right position play-wise, play-call-wise, for him to be successful. Regardless of how he plays, man, I think you have to keep playing him and intertwining him in the offensive game plan for the offense to be able to operate well in this RPO, the system that they have, the run game. I just think it opens up a lot more. So if he comes out and he has a couple incompletions, you still got to keep developing and growing with him and intertwining him, in my opinion, in 30% of the quarterback snaps somehow to get this offense to be able to be to the point by the time we face the Georgias and, you know, the LSUs, to be able to win those type of games. Like, I love Mertz. Don't have a lot of bad things to say about him, but we're not going to win those games with Mertz at quarterback playing 95% of the snaps. We're going to need something different, somebody to elevate the play around, the play calling, because the play calling is just not going to get us there, and Graham Mertz ain't going to get us there. We're going to need somebody to play some heroic football.
Yeah, and I think I liked the conversation. I tweeted the video out between Ari Wasserman and Andy Staples that they had over at On3. Andy's kind of like us. He's in it. He lives in Gainesville. He played in Florida. He graduated from Florida. Ari's kind of just watching it from the outside, and he's like, what is Florida playing for this year? It's not the SEC. It's not the playoff. You're playing for hope. I called all offseason, I called that Miami game the Hope Bowl, and hope was snatched. Hope was lost. DJ gives you hope. And if you're Billy Napier, now here's to put you between a rock and a hard place. You want to start DJ. You also want to get rid of Billy Napier. What if DJ saves Billy Napier?
I don't think DJ's that good.
I think 6-6, 7-5, Billy Napier is coaching DJ Lagway in 2025.
It depends on the wins, in my opinion. I don't know if 6-6 saves him. If you lose all your rivalries, you know, you lose Florida State, Georgia, Tennessee, you already got blowed out by Miami. If you get to 6 somehow with the rest of that schedule, I don't think he comes back. I think you got
to get with the 8 games you have, you have to pick 5, or you have to pick at least 4 SEC wins out of those and FSU. And if you're saying that they lose to FSU, then you're winning 5 of those 8 SEC games. That means you're beating.
Who said they're losing to FSU?
I'm saying Corey said they lose to all their rivals, so FSU would be a rival.
So I'm saying you gotta get five.
Yeah, but you can't. He literally to get to five or six more wins, it would not be losing to rivals. So that's why I'm saying if he gets to 6-6 or gets to 7-5, that's wins over Kentucky or Tennessee or LSU or Ole Miss, FSU. Like to get to that record, you're getting those wins.
I think these guys are playing for their life this weekend. Like I think like every game since that Miami game is potential you're out of here type game. Win, lose, or draw to me Saturday, there's no reason this team should lose this game. I don't care what the spread is. That we shouldn't even be favored to lose this game considering how long the staff has been here, how they've recruited, what we got on our roster. You got a game, a first season regime that's out there in Texas A&M. Mike Echo, first-time head coach, coming on a away game into one of the toughest environments in college football. There's no reason we should lose this game. So in my opinion, if we lose this game, like, we probably got this coach in the SEC, like, straight up. Like, what do we have to play for the rest of this season or to look forward to with the future if you're losing to guys like Mike Elko, Texas A&M coming into your building? Like, Kirby's going to curb stomp you. The rest of the schedule may curb stomp you because Mike Elko is probably at the bottom of the list of coaches and talent that we got to face going forward.
Yeah, especially
next week, probably a notch under A&M.
Who?
Oh, Mississippi State next week.
Jeff Lebby, Mississippi State next week. I think I would put them below.
Yeah, I still think that we're on Sunday press conference watch every Sunday between now and the end of the year. I think that there's
back to Ronan Tony.
Bro, yeah. picked the wrong fall to have a newborn.
You picked the wrong time to start being a beat writer for the Florida Gators, Nick. I'll tell you what.
Yeah, sure have, man. Sure have.
Touch grass and touch Pampers, baby.
We are touching Pampers. Yeah. Just an unbelievable amount of diapers that you go through.
Oh, it's crazy. It's
unbelievable amount.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Let's see. So, Nick, is there a chance that Andy Jean play? I know he's questionable, right?
Buddy, I think I'm wondering if Ricky Pearsall plays before Andy Jean.
Okay. So, Andy Jean.
Ricky just got shot.
Yeah. Andy Jean.
Hold on, Nick. Before, shout out to Ricky Pearsall for wearing the Rolex that they tried to rob from him on the field as he hugged the first responders that saved his life.
Yeah, I saw the perpetrator of the robbery. They charged him with attempted murder. His public defender is trying to plead that down. They're also trying to not have him charged as an adult. I don't care that you're 17. You made a very adult decision.
That means you owned a gun illegally.
Yeah.
Which to me means that you are making adult choices.
Yep. So you just picked the wrong guy, man. Picked the wrong Rolex wearer. Did not know you were going up against an elite, probably top 2% in the entire world athlete. Tried to get a Rolex and got yourself shot. And while you sit in prison now with your gunshot wound. But quite a flex for Ricky to be on the sideline wearing said Rolex.
Yeah. I had a great joke, but I'm not going to do it.
You can let it fly.
I can't. Yeah. I've been in that position a couple times. I'm like, that's just going to get me canceled. I got a lot
of people.
I'm getting canceled.
Yeah. Not right now. Things are going great.
Obviously, same concerns exist. We went over a lot of this game on Monday's episode that you guys heard on Tuesday morning. Any final thoughts before we get out of here?
What do you think the crowd will be like? I saw someone mention that it wasn't sold out, and normally I would have gotten, you know, that promotional email.
I got an email the other day saying that tickets were still available.
I think the crowd's going to be itching for something regardless, good or bad. Like, they're going to be either ready to cheer or ready to boo at the edge of their seats.
Here's a boo, because I've seen, like, it when it's not an if. I know I'm seeing people say if Graham Mertz runs out first, they're going to boo How do you feel about that?
I feel that's just fan stuff, man. Like, it happens in arenas and in stadiums. There's nothing it's nothing against Florida. Like, Florida fans mm-hmm. aren't wrong if they boo. And people need to kill that hole. It's not towards Graham Mertz, in my opinion. I think it's towards just people want to see change in something of some type of spark, bro. We're in a deep dungeon right now of just like negativity. We haven't had a big win in a very long time. It's just been L after L. Our rivals are just, you know, clowning us on every corner. People just want to see a win, and we got to see Lagway last week, and that felt like the future. And I don't think it's going to be anything negative toward Graham. I appreciate everything he's brought to the program, but I think you just got to get some positivity into the program, and you're just going to see that reflected with the fans this weekend. People just want to see something positive, man.
That's probably the most excited I've seen a fan base. I know it's the crowd, and I know that there's those that want to be contrarians about the opponent, but I don't know if I've seen a fan base that excited. Maybe that AR game against Tennessee, but probably since Will Greer in that Ole Miss game back right. in 2015.
Yeah,
that one was big. Yeah, 2015 Ole Miss, but also Anthony versus Utah. And beating number five Utah. Okay. But that was so short-lived because the Kentucky game was literally 7 days later.
Yeah, the Kentucky game was 7 days later. Yeah. But, yeah, no, you're probably right. That one spin move that he had. Who caught that? Was it 88
Marcus
caught that,
right? Weston? Or no, Javion Frazier?
It was Frazier's.
Yeah, I think it was Frazier's. 100%. Yeah, where he had the rollout, and it just didn't make sense how he was able to even get the throw off and then. Brazier's
it was a terrible play call in hindsight.
But no, I mean, watching the Dolphins game yesterday before Tua got injured, and obviously he ended up throwing three interceptions, but the crowd was even booing, you know, Mike McDaniel and Tua yesterday because of their offense and what they were doing. So, you know, it's going to happen at all facets of the game, right? Mike McDaniel's brought the Dolphins a few playoffs, right? And they won against Jacksonville last week. Everybody remembers that. And so crowds have short leashes. I don't think it's a Graham Mertz boo. It's not. It's definitely not a personal to him, but I do think the fans are getting restless just as a whole and looking for any sort of excitement.
Yeah, the good book speaks of a place called Purgatory. And my goodness, if it doesn't feel real these last 4 years. But I don't know how, if you're Graham Mertz, when you trot out there, like how you separate that. Like, oh, shit, it's for coach. Wait, but why is it for coach? Oh, it's for coach because I'm on the field.
I mean, I
don't know if you're the player.
I think
these guys are getting paid now. So, like,
right.
They're not kids. They're not kids anymore.
Comes with the territory, man.
Right. I think it comes with maturity. I think it comes with what Graham Mertz probably saw last week. And I think it comes from a frustration of knowing and being around the Florida fan base for now, the last year and a half, right? They're looking for hope wherever they can find it. You know, these kids aren't dumb. They understand the stakes. They understand what they're playing for. And I think they also understand fandom, right? And I don't know if Graham Mertz was ever booed at Wisconsin, but I would imagine that he's been around a lot of booing in his career, whether it's towards him or towards somebody else. So, you know, I hope that they're able to separate it. But, you know, at the end of the day, I don't think anybody – when Graham Mertz trots out, I don't think that fans will boo right away. I do think that if you are sputtering, especially on a scripted drive, that you're going to get – a lot of people that are on pins and needles starting to chant some things and to boo a little bit louder. And I think that those boos will get a little bit louder on, this is a great example, when that 3rd-and-7 run call comes.
Yeah, because they're going for it. It's just a loser mentality in my mind because you're going for it on 4th, so you're trying to shorten what 4th down may be, man. Go for the sticks. Like, let's press a little bit. But that's just what it is. We can't, like, fans gonna come to fan. You know, fans have the right to cheer and to boo. We just gotta be moving the sticks. It's gotta be productive. We're just all restless, man. You know, and Graham Mertz is a older guy. He got to know it comes with the territory, and you got to be – this is the SEC. This isn't Pop Warner football. This isn't my son playing this Saturday where everybody gets to play and, you know, don't boo. Everybody's a winner after the game. Everybody, it's just not that friendly. This is big boy football, and people want to see wins. So Graham Mertz got a job to do, and his job is not to worry about the fans. His job is to go move the sticks and go get 7 points to go win a football game. So he need to be focused on that. And if he can't move the sticks, then the booing and the other stuff just comes with the territory sometimes, man.
Mm-hmm. I remembered I looked this stat up. I don't think I ever published it, but Paul Chryst, the Wisconsin head coach, was 52-16 as a head coach at Wisconsin. So not a lot of booing. Went to some Rose Bowls. And that was before Graham Mertz became his starting quarterback. And then obviously Graham came to Florida after Paul Chryst was fired.
Wasn't Paul Chryst fired when Graham Mertz was there?
While he was the starting quarterback, yes.
Oh, okay.
But so, prior to Graham, Paul had put together a 52-16 record.
I would say that would be sad if I knew that I was the quarterback, the starting quarterback of two coaches that got fired under my tenure. But
kind of where I was going with that, yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't think you're alluding to Graham Mertz being the like the merchant of death, you know, or what's the guy that walks around, that dark character right before somebody dies in the cartoons?
Grim Reaper?
The Grim Reaper, yeah. Yeah, my brain's fried right now. So the Grim Reaper, that would be tough to be the Grim Reaper.
What is wrong with you, Nick? What is wrong, the Grand Reaper, man?
Like, how much time do you have? How much time do you have? There's a long list of things that are wrong with me.
The Grand Reaper.
All right, gang. Let's get out of here. We appreciate there's 1,745 of you watching right now. We appreciate every single one of you. If you are watching on YouTube, please hit the like button, the subscribe button before you leave. Please visit all of our sponsors, bruntinsurance.com. Home Field Apparel, Game Time Sidekicks, and Alumni Hall. Alumni Hall is running that new promo code, Stadium and Gale, through the end of September. We appreciate you guys for watching. We appreciate Emmett Smith more than he can imagine for coming on the show today. We appreciate everybody for watching, and we will see you at the same corner, same time next week.
Yeah, man.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9, selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.